Welcome to Her Story, a project by Chick History. I'm your host, Rebecca Price. For 1 year, we asked 50 contemporary women to share the story of the historical woman who has inspired her. Join us every week for a new story of inspiration, from the headliners to the lesser-known gems.
Dust off the books, read all the letters, preserve with time. Dig out the truth written between the lines. Her hair's still brick, cannot be left behind. She shall not be forgotten.
Joining me today from LA for Her Story number 5 is Megan Carberry. Megan is a political analyst and media pro with a flair for pop culture. Building off of her first gig as a Chicago Tribune reporter and columnist, Megan later became Arianna Huffington's chief of staff and then went on to work as an independent journalist and web entrepreneur, where she co-founded a thriving women's lifestyle social network called True Confessions. Inspired by the historic 2008 presidential election, she became Rock the Vote's communications director during the 2010 midterm election cycle. She helped launch the organization's high school civics program, Democracy Class, and fought against restrictive laws around the country that would make voter registration harder for young Americans. She is also a contributor to Mashable.com, the world's largest social media news site. She co-hosts Variety's Wilshire in Washington podcast on Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and she teaches political journalism at Roosevelt University. To learn more about Megan and her work, you can visit her website, MeganCarberry.com. Megan, hi, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Rebecca.
Well, who have you chosen to share with us today?
Today, I want to talk about Evelyn Nesbit, who is not someone you hear a ton about in history books, but is one of the most interesting women I've ever encountered.
Well, please introduce us all to Evelyn Nesbit.
Evelyn's story starts at the turn of the last century in the 1890s, when she was one of the most famous artist models and chorus girls on the East Coast. She was born in Pittsburgh, and her dad died when she was young. She had a younger brother, and her mom was, if you can imagine, one of the first stage moms like you'd think of for a Lindsay Lohan or a Britney Spears in these days, where she had this very pretty daughter who everyone wanted to photograph and wanted to be seen with. And after her husband died, she was a seamstress, but that wasn't really paying the bills. So she decided to cash in on her gorgeous daughter. And, you know, to be fair, Evelyn also had big stars in her eyes. She loved performing and loved being photographed. And ultimately, the family moved to New York, where she was photographed by a number of very famous and influential photographers of the day, including Charles Dana Gibson. Most people would probably recognize her as one of the famous Gibson girls, which you see in old portraits. The woman with brown hair turned sideways and her hair is styled so that it looks like a question mark. I remember growing up, my aunt had a Gibson girl wallpaper and my grandma had a painting like that too. I had no idea at the time that it was Evelyn Nesbit, but she was the model for that, and that was wildly popular at the time. And that work was called The Eternal Question. So, you know, when she got up to New York, her mom was always, you know, in need of money, and she was so beautiful. So a lot of men took an interest in her. And one of the first men who, you know, was really after her was a famous architect named Stanford White. And he is someone, he was an architect with McKim, Mead, and White, and they're responsible for building up loads of Lower Manhattan. He's someone in history worth following along with as well. But he was a very famous architect, and in what's now Madison Square Park, in the Gramercy Park neighborhood by the Flatiron Building, he had this very cool pad that had a statue of the goddess Diana on top of the building, and this sort of, you know, sweet place where he would take these chorus girls back to after their shows and throw all these dinner parties. He of course had a whole family and whatnot, but this was sort of his fun pad where he was entertaining some of the greatest minds in New York in the day. And there was a big uproar over the fact that Lady Diana, the goddess on top of the building, was shirtless. And so it was this time period where there was a conflict between blatant sexuality, and Evelyn Nesbit was someone who was at the center of all of that because she was the most beautiful girl in town and the hottest architect in town was taking her around. There was a show at the time called Floridora, which was a very popular show at the Casino Theater where all the prettiest girls were in the show, and Evelyn became one of the chorus girls. He picked her up there and started taking her around. And at one point, and this is kind of controversial in history, she says that she was basically raped and he gave her some champagne after a long day of photo shoot. And, you know, she woke up and terrible things had happened to her. And, you know, often in history, which is very male dominated, it's portrayed that she was this vixen who seduced him and whatnot. So you can do your own research if you're interested and believe what you will. I believe that, you know, at her age with a grown man, she was a little bit taken advantage of in that situation. So that began their sort of intimate relationship that persisted for years. Although he loved plenty of women. His favorite song was from a show, and it was called I Could Love a Million Girls, The Architect. But, you know, life just kept happening for them for a while. And then entered John Barrymore, who, as you may recall, is the father of, or the grandfather of, the current actress Drew Barrymore, and one of the great Hollywood dynasties of all time, or entertaining dynasties of all time. And the two of them had a bit of a relationship. They were very in love. It was definitely a young, youthful, passionate experience, and they really wanted to be together. And John Barrymore was an up-and-coming actor, and he was a cartoonist for what was basically the New York Times or New Yorker of the era, and also a stage actor and comedian. And they were out drinking one night, and they spent the night together, and who knows what happened, but it was quite scandalous for the day. And Evelyn's mother and the architect, Stanford White, decided to try to separate them. And John Barrymore pleaded in front of the architect, please, Evelyn, marry me. And he was like, you can't do that. And shipped her off to a boarding school where a lot of people in history say she had an abortion. It's not necessarily true. There's some evidence that she might have had an appendectomy, or, you know, might have just been away for a while. But while she was away, there was this other storyline brewing all along with a billionaire from Pennsylvania named Harry K. Thaw, who was very jealous of the architect Stanford wife. Apparently, in their high society scenes, Harry Thaw was not a cool guy, and he was being rejected by some of the more esteemed gentlemen of the town. He had a very violent and sketchy sort of past, you know, where he was caught abusing younger girls and boys all over the world. And he was so rich, his mom doted on him. She gave him a budget of about $80,000 a month in the late 1890s, which is a ton of money. And the guy just really wanted to be liked and wanted to be Stanford White, was obsessed with him. So the one thing he wanted most was Evelyn Nesbit. And, you know, in her moment when she had been banished from New York by the architect and her mom, the billionaire swooped in, married her, and she got sort of trapped in this bad relationship with him where his family hated her and she was out of her modeling and performing scene and was supposed to be his wife. And the guy was just furious with Stanford White and wouldn't let her speak to him. And one night they went up to New York to watch a show in the park, what's now the Madison Square Park. And during the song I Could Love a Million Girls, which was Stanford White's favorite, the billionaire walked up to him and shot him in cold blood in front of everyone and yelled, you ruined my wife. And from that point on, it was the trial of the century, you know, just like one you would have seen in the modern era with paparazzi and everyone trying to figure out what was at the cause of the great architect's murder and the most beautiful girl in New York and the billionaire. It was quite a scandal. And what wound up happening was that the billionaire was declared insane and Evelyn had to testify, and there were all sorts of gruesome details. And ultimately he was let out of prison, you know, through his financial connections, and they got divorced, and she went on to live sort of a small, not very public life, and she still performed, and ultimately she died in the 1960s, I believe it was 1967, in Los Angeles, and she had a kid, and the movie The Girl in the Velvet Swing was made about her, as was the musical Ragtime. But I've found in my study of her that a lot of the articles or work that has been produced about her really shows it through quite a misogynist lens. There she was, a vixen who ruined these powerful men when, quite frankly, I feel they pursued her and her mom betrayed her. And the one chance she had at love with John Barrymore never really happened. And, you know, if you were a girl in that era, I guess you went on to live in obscurity. And if you were John Barrymore, you went on to be one of the biggest stars in the world.
And why, Evelyn, what is it about her story that resonates so much with you?
I am a political commentator. I always follow political news and whatnot. And in 2009, I've always lived on the West Coast, and I moved to New York, and I happened to move next to Madison Square Park, and I was there for a few months, and then sometimes people send me books to review, and I got a book about this park and about Evelyn Nesbit, and I just became so enmeshed in this story, and I was visiting the park every day, and it just was around the block for me, and it just kind of spoke to me. I almost felt like I was haunted by a ghost or something. I know that's creepy and dramatic to say, but I just feel like this woman what is remembered by history very unfairly. And, you know, there's many political things in here that continue to be factors for women in the modern era, whether it's being hypersexualized, being taken advantage of sexually, not being respected as a performer, but as, you know, someone to be consumed by the masses and to look a certain way or set a standard and then be built up and torn down. As we see so many starlets pursue this today. They pursue the fame and beauty in certain styles and positions and culture, and, you know, society enables that and builds it up and tells you this is what a woman should be. And then they're the first people to just rally around, you know, the crazy train when the trial happens or things go badly for these girls who are clearly struggling with the expectations that have been set up for them. And it's so interesting to me that that was happening over 100 years ago in society, and that, you know, we still can't seem to get past that in this day and age. I mean, Evelyn would probably have been the most recognizable face in the grocery store checkout line of Us Weekly in the current era. And it's interesting just to think of all the progress that's happened for women, such as getting the right to vote, or, you know, the sexual revolution with birth control, and the gender struggles that have happened in this time period. And just to look at a famous female role model and see a trend still continuing is deeply interesting to me.
Now, as far as a book recommendation goes, what is the one book you recommend for listeners so they can start learning more about Evelyn Nesbit?
The book that I read that first got me interested in this story was called American Eve by Paula Arubaru. She's a college professor who has studied this very efficiently. I've had the chance to listen to her lecture in New York and toured some of the Stanford White buildings with her and the architect's granddaughter. And it is a fantastic history told from her story. And it's definitely something worth checking out.
Well, there you have it for Evelyn Nesbit. Megan, thank you so much for sharing her story with us.
Thank you.
To learn more about her story and other projects by Chick History, you can visit the website chickhistory.com. And please join us every week for another story of an inspirational woman in history.
I'm here to tell a story. Something precious and fine about a woman who made a difference with her life. She might not be known, but to only a few, her story remembered here is gonna change that view. Her history left behind, she shall not be forgotten. Her story not forgotten.